Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause a motherfucker 6'4". Hey Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up and away we go. Mic check and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Welcome everybody to the Joe Prano podcast. I'm your host, Joe Prano. That was Doug Ray. It's good to hear the Doug Ray theme song after such a long time. One of the last episodes I did of this podcast, maybe it's two or three ago, it's probably a year plus ago, I said, getting guests is a pain in the ass. It's a new era of the Joe Prano podcast. We're going to do the JP Pete. Every time I can't get a guest, I'm going to get Pizza Star to come on. And then we never did it again until today. Just when you thought you were out, I pull you back in. I'm joined today by my good friend, my surf coach, Ding, my golf coach, Ding. Double Ding, my road feature, Triple Ding, the man, the myth, Virginia's best player, Pete Sestaro. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Wow, that might be the best intro I've ever had. I just touched myself up. That sounds weird. I went to settings. I'm trying to hide myself so I don't see myself.
No, you got to see yourself. I need to see you.
You need to see me.
I need to see you. And the reason I need to see you, and the reason that you're here today, and the reason that the show is in some ways back, is there's a new era of the Dirty Sports podcast. Anybody who's listening to this probably knows about it. The Dirty Sports is now a Substack property. We're on Substack. And when the Dirty Sports moved to a Substack, I was like, oh, I should probably jump start. I should probably put the spark plugs to the jumper cables to the nipples of my own Substack page, which I have entitled Miscellaneous. And I moved all of the podcasts over there. Dirty Sports is on Substack. Dirty Slides is on Substack. The Kooks of Comedy. Is it returning? Who knows? A good thing to do would be to subscribe if you want to find out. I moved the Joe Prano podcast over there. And my favorite thing about it is you can put up video very easily. Your podcasts are basically all video unless you go out of your way not to make it video. So we need your beautiful face on this beautiful platform.
Thank you. Well, I just touched my face up. I can't see any difference, but I took my glasses off. So
there you go.
And I feel like I have to be honest with the viewers. My face is touched up, although maybe it is a little. Now it seems weird. I'm going to untouch myself.
When I think about you, I untouch myself. Whoa. Yeah,
I feel more comfortable like this.
Pete.
Hang on. You said a couple things there.
Yeah, please. It's your show. You're the official co-host of the show.
Well, maybe what I go with first here. Well, I'll go with this first because I'm going to forget. First of all, please bring the Kooks of Comedy back. You know, that the shark episode of the Kooks Comedy is maybe the best podcast episode I've ever heard in my entire life.
It may have been the undoing. It may have been the first chink in the armor in terms of the ending. I revisited the Kooks of Comedy recently and because I moved it. It was a lot of the episodes were private. And then I moved it. And when I moved it over here, they all became available again. And so I was like, ooh, I'll go back and I'll listen to some old ones. I listened to some old ones. I listened to one you were on, which was fantastic. And then I also listened to the final episode where we said, this is not the end of the show. We'll be back, just not with regularity. We have never been back. We've never done an episode. We've done no episodes since. It's like how I said, I'm going to start doing this show regularly with you as my co-host. And now a year and a half later, you have returned.
These things happen. Anyway, people should listen to that. It's so good. It's such a dilemma. You know, you're in the ocean with a friend and a shark appears. Do you warn your friend? It's so good. And it's a Sophie's choice to a degree.
The Kooks of Comedy is like Conan O'Brien's masturbating bear. you know, I'd love to do it, but I have to get clearance from the network that we were formerly on. I'm worried about, I would love to bring it back. Would there be a cease and desist from Lachlan Patterson? Does every episode have to be with him? I have plans to reach out to Lachlan and say, hey, maybe just like, doesn't have to be all the time. Just like we said at the end of the show, let's just do it less regularity. We're both in a new county now. We're both north of Los Angeles. We're very close to each other once again. So seems silly not to bring it back with a whole new vibe, new area code.
The other thing you said miscellaneous is your name on Substack. Maybe explain the meaning behind miscellaneous.
So miscellaneous was the name of probably my favorite thing I've ever done, which was a wild variety show. I did it at Galapagos, for starters, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. You appeared on it many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I called it miscellaneous is not only because I've always loved the word miscellaneous. It's like if you go into somebody's, if you go into like a crazy OCD guy's like workshop, he'll have like nails, screws, and then it just says misc. And it's just like all the other shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always loved the word, and the meaning of the word miscellaneous is just like, and other fucking, like all the things. It's like the junk drawer of life. Mm-hmm. So when I started, I decided to start a variety show in Brooklyn, and I decided to call it miscellaneous because I wanted it to be everything. And I always said stand up, sketch, music, performance art, videos, and we did a lot of fun things on miscellaneous. And
we did. I remember one night we roasted an 8-year-old, right?
Yeah. That's honestly one of my more favorite ones because I had all the performers on the show. I told all the performers on the show. It was before, you know, they had started doing the Comedy Central roasts by then, mm-hmm. but it was before they became such a big thing. They were very rare at the time.
It was Friars Club was the only thing that you really knew about roasting back then.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, we're going to roast an 8-year-old. And everybody's like, what does that mean? And I hired a kid off of Craigslist. He had appeared on the Chappelle Show as young Elian Gazelle. Wow. He had one credit. He had one credit before we hired him.
Mm-hmm.
He was Elian Gonzalez on the Chappelle Show.
Elian Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I remember that?
Yeah. And the idea was I had a bunch of comics on the show. I had a bunch of sketch performers on the show. And everybody who's on the show, yourself included, I said, listen, we're going to roast an 8-year-old. And the gist of the thing is he's my little brother, like in a little brother program.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves comedy. And he said he wanted to be on my comedy show. And I said, only if you get A's in school. And when he did, I said, okay, you can be on the comedy show, but you can't perform. We'll just roast you. That's the ultimate comedy experience, is if you're enough of a comedic legend, you eventually get roasted.
Yeah.
So we all roasted him. And I remember I said that up front. I said, I told him if he got A's in school. And my brother was drunk in the crowd. And he goes, he has AIDS? And I was like, you're not even on the dais.
Oh, that's amazing. I remember that too. Somehow I thought I said he had AIDS, but I guess your brother did. It's so weird, the memories.
Well, it was so fun because I opened up the thing and I said that. And Mike said, and it was such a fun comedic group think because anything that was said then became like canon to this kid's story. So I remember you going up and making a reference to something I did, and we all just like created who this kid was, and it was so dirty, and it was, you know, it was awful. I remember me saying that I had to pick him up at school one day because he got in trouble for jerking off onto one of the kids. And I had given him a line, and he was like, it's not jerking off, unless it's on to somebody. And so I thought that was funny. And
so, I love you're giving a kid line.
Yeah, yeah.
Not jerking off unless it's on somebody. That's your one line.
Yeah, and then
wasn't his mother there too?
His mother was there, and his mother loved it.
Yeah,
his mother thought it was so great and so funny. And one girl that I had gone to high school with that I had invited to do the show was appalled. She's nothing was more offensive to her. This was abusive to a child. He's going to be mentally, battered by this for the rest of his life. And I was like, his mom thinks it's fucking hilarious. He played Elian Gonzalez on the fucking Chappelle Show. Get fucked, lady. Literally Greenwich High School, all girls. Like she was literally clutching her pearls.
Yeah. There's always one, right?
Yeah. So that's where Miscellaneous came from. And then forever, anybody who knows my email address knows that the word miscellaneous is involved. I won't give you my full email address, but the word miscellaneous is involved, which drives people crazy when I, tell them. They're like, why is this your fucking email address? And it's actually because I started a mailing list for the show and it was on Gmail. And then in using that, I was like, Gmail's great. I'm just making this my fucking email. And now years later, I've never been able to get it. But on Substack, I wanted to put video stuff, podcast stuff, writing, stand up, whatever it may be. So I said, a miscellaneous mishmash of musings in multiple media formats.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad you're excited about it.
And today I put up the video from the open mic from hell that we did in New Orleans.
Oh, nice.
I had for months said, like, I can't put that up. The things I say on that cannot be on the internet. And I was like, behind a paywall is not real. If it happens behind a paywall, did it even really happen?
No, I don't think so. You can say whatever you want behind a paywall.
You also performed on the open mic from hell. Do you remember your three words?
Christmas. That's it.
Didn't stick out in your brain.
No. Do you remember my three words?
I don't remember your three words. No.
Yeah.
Do you have video of it? Did they send you video of it?
They didn't. No. So the thing I'm coming to learn in comedy is that they tell you they're going to send you a video and then they almost never do.
Unless you harass them or unless, they want you to put it up, unless it helps them in some sort of way. Like I got a message from them. It was like, hey, here it is. You can put it up. And I was like, I can't put that up. But then I actually wrote a whole piece about it today and put it up and I sent it to Chris True. And I said, here, look, I did a whole thing for the thing months later. Almost.
Good.
I want to talk about a couple things.
Before you do it, remember the show we did in Alaska where the girl went on and just basically she opened, but she basically didn't do any comedy.
Yeah. She was like, I'm opening up for you guys.
Yeah.
And then she didn't do any comedy really. And just whatever we told her not to say, she kept saying.
Anyway, I've asked her now a number of times if she would send me the video, and she has not. Did she send you the video?
No, I did not ask for it.
You didn't ask for it.
I asked.
You did ask for it. You were literally threatening to punch people in the crowd.
That's right. That was a fun one. I like that show.
Yeah, and I had an acid reflux attack on stage the entire time. So I just want to see what that looks like.
Let's talk about that.
Sure.
You told me we were sitting in the green room. We had pre-ordered because the night before we had gone in and we had met the people who run it. We had pre-ordered fish and chips.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember
a miscellaneous
mishmash of foods.
Yeah.
I remember our fish and chips had just been served. I was tucking my napkin into my collar and, rolling up my sleeves. And you came in and you said, I've got acid reflux.
Said it very calmly, though, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It was direct, but calm. You're like you had an announcement.
So I'm having an acid reflux attack.
Yeah, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, you go. All right. As if I said to you, I don't know, decent crowd out there tonight.
I've never had an acid reflux attack that had, like, you know, I've had it where it's bothersome, but I've never had it where it was like problematic to me, you know.
I have.
So I know that now.
Yeah.
So now I know that you were telling me that you had a problem.
Yeah.
I know that after that.
You said we have a problem on our hands.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, I probably couldn't talk that well because I was having an acid reflux attack.
And then I was, and you're like, you don't even care. I was like, I don't know, get a water or something. Like what? I was like, this guy want me to like pour milk down his gullet? Does this guy want me to go get him like a, I don't even know, what do you use for Rolaids?
See, the problem at that point, and I've had a number of these in my life.
It's too late.
It's too late. I can't get a Tums down if I wanted to. Nothing is going down and everything is coming up. It's really disgusting, but this is behind the paywall. I'm just regurgitating like stomach acid. It feels like the foam of a beer just keeps coming out of my mouth. And as you saw, and the entire crowd that night, because I'm a fucking pro, I just did the entire show with a cup in my hand, and I was literally spitting up foam into a cup for 20 minutes of comedy.
And everybody for a while thought you were dipping.
Yeah, it kind of appeared, because I'll say something, and then I'll spit into a cup. But it's
given where we were in Kenai, in Main Street Bar and Motel in Kenai, Alaska, wouldn't have been. I'm sure you wouldn't be the first comedian to be dipping and doing comedy. No. My dad once almost made me quit doing comedy because he watched me go on stage with gum in my mouth once. So, you know, certain places you would be banned forever should you be dipping, right. But not in Kenai, Alaska.
Not Kenai, no.
But then you revealed to them you were in fact not dipping. You told them, guys, I'm having an acid reflux.
Well, it's unbelievable. Like, because while I'm spinning up sometimes, first of all, I'm making noises. I'm going, like, yeah. It's bad. And it like comes out like, you don't just spit perfectly into a cup. It's like slime. So it's like sticking to my chin. It was absolutely disgusting. But I fucking did it.
You're a great comic. I've always told you that. But you know, there's so much neuroses that goes into your stand-up comedy life. So it would be crazy to think that the answer to this is yes. But is that the worst experience you've ever had on stage?
No. No way. That was fine. I mean, it was certainly unpleasant, but no, I've had far worse experiences on stage.
Do you know like the one show you would never, like, is there one show that stands out to you as like one you're like, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. I never want to do that place again or that kind of crowd or whatever.
You know, the Mind Joe is a pretty good, I did a show once in Florida for a girl was missing, and it was a benefit to raise money for, like,
I like that you did. I like,
I didn't realize it until I got there.
I like the way you introed it, by the way. You didn't do a benefit for a girl who was missing. I did a show for a girl that was missing. Yeah. You found her in the woods. You're like, hey, what are you doing out here? She's like, I'm missing. You're like, yeah, you want to hear some jokes there?
But what a terrible show. Like, that was awful because they were just talking about this girl that was missing and people were crying. And then they're like, all right, let's bring up the comedian. And I went up there, totally bombed. It was just incredibly awkward for everyone.
Any show that they try to make comedy a part of is always a failure.
Yeah.
If you want to say we're having a comedy night, proceeds will go to this. That's and let's a not totally talk different at all. Thing. Yeah.
Also, let's not talk at all. Let's not show pictures. I'm like standing next to a picture of a missing girl.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
The worst show, and I've talked about it on many a podcast because a big topic of conversation in the comedy world is your biggest bomb, the worst show you ever did, was I performed at Lehigh when I was there and just ate shit. And no one told me it was a cancer benefit. And I opened with a Daryl Strawberry has cancer joke. No one told me. I think the punchline as for a 20-year-old Joe Prano was like, apparently cocaine gives you cancer. Crack gives you cancer. Something like that. Who knows? But that was the joke. And of course it bombed because it was a cancer benefit.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
What was your most recent comedy performance?
I just did Bay Street Theater a couple of weeks ago, last week.
And how'd that go? That's a pretty big little, I mean, fancy, like, fancy little theater there in Sag Harbor.
Sag Harbor is like 250 people, 250 very old people.
Three comic lineup.
Three comics, Joe Vesey show.
Was there a host?
No host.
One, two, three.
Big I hosted. Group. Yeah.
Oh, you hosted.
Yeah.
Or tag team. You tag teamed.
No, I hosted. I actually brought up everybody.
So you had to go out cold. 250 person theater.
Yeah. It was fine. I did some jokes about, you know, living in Bridgehampton and made fun of them a bit. Good show. Good crowd. I'd love to do it again. You know, cool little theater. Have you ever done that show?
I've never done that show. No.
There's a ton of names like on the wall. I guess they've been doing it for a while there.
Yeah. But feels like they've had comedy there for years in one form or another.
Yeah. Well, you should definitely do that show. I'll talk to Joe for sure. But that's a fun one.
I went to play golf today. I live right next to, I guess it would be, what is the name? Ventura Naval Base, something like that. I forget what the actual name is, but right here in Port Hueneme, there's a naval base, and
right.
And there is a golf course on the naval base.
Mm-hmm.
So, I knew about this because there's a bunch of Navy golf courses throughout Southern California. And me and Laz and our crew used to play the Navy golf course down in Orange, which is in Orange County. Great course. Famous mm-hmm. for the course that Tiger grew up playing with his dad. Okay. His dad, I believe, was the maybe even a pro there. So we used to play that all the time. You just walk on, you play. It was cheap. Great, great course down there. Remarkably like low greens fees for how nice a course it is. Pretty quiet, like not usually highly trafficked. I think mostly because the only way you can buy a tee time is like through this Navy website instead of Golf Now or Tee Off or whatever.
Right.
So today I was like, I checked the tee times on the same course, wide open. I'm just going to go drive over there and hop on. I'm not going to get a tee time. I'll just take the first one that's up when I get there.
Right.
This is very different. You have to drive onto a Navy base. A man with a gun in uniform stops me entering the base.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? I said, I'm trying to play golf. And he said, do you have a pass? And I said, nope. And he goes, well, you got to go to that building right there and get a pass. And I said, okay. So
that
I go over to
That sounds like the government at work.
Yeah. So I go over to the building. I say, I'd like to get a pass to play golf today. He said, that's not how it works. I'm like, okay, how does it work? And he goes, you just call the course up and they'll tell you the paperwork that you got to fill out so that you can get on the base so that you can play. Oh, okay. So I call the course and I say, hey, I want to play golf today. And they said, have you played golf before here? And I said, no, I haven't. They go, well, that's not happening. I was like, well, what do you mean? And they're like, you have to have a background check.
Oh my God.
So that you can be cleared as a civilian, even come onto the base.
You're so never that you playing can out play there.
Right. So I was like, all right, send me the form. And he's like, all right, what's your email address? And I was like, miscellaneous. And he's like, how do you spell that? And I'm like, yeah, I can't say I'm surprised that you don't know.
No.
Have him send me the form. I end up going and hitting balls at the driving range at another golf course nearby instead of playing. I came back and I filled out my background check because I don't think that there, you know, I'm not a felon. I don't even think I have parking tickets currently. So the big question is, do you think my outspoken hatred of the military on podcasts, the internet, TikTok, Instagram reels, stand-up comedy shows. Do you think the U.S. government is smart enough to know if they do a background check of me, does it come up that this man hates the military?
No. I don't think so at all. I also think if you had a Facebook page full of short videos where you go on these diatribes saying how you're going to join a golf course and kill somebody, that they still wouldn't fucking, they'd still let you on. And then you go on there and kill everyone. And they're like, oh,
well now they're going to know about this.
Yeah. It makes me wonder what do they look for? And right. I have no idea.
But well, no, I think you're good. I should know in 2 to 3 weeks, the answer to this question. They said 2 to 3 weeks, you'll find out if you have been cleared to play golf. And then they're like, if you want to play with anybody else, they got to sign up for it too. So I didn't send it to him. I guess if I play this course, which is hundreds of yards away, like it's right here.
Wow.
And it's always empty and it looks like a pretty nice course. I guess I'll just be playing it alone unless I get my other civilian friends to.
Well, I should probably go through the background check just so when I'm out there, we can play it.
Yeah, you absolutely should. I'll forward it to you. So then I go over to this other golf course. Alevis Links. They didn't have any tee times today, and I really only wanted to play 9. So I went over there. I was like, I'll just hit some balls. Mm-hmm. And I get there, and the lady goes, how many golf balls do you want? I go, she's like, small, medium, or large? I go, how many are large? She's like, 100. I go, I get it, 100 balls? Give me the large. I get the 100 balls, or sorry, I get charged for the 100 balls, $12, swipe my card, send it through, and then she goes, just so you know, the range closes in 20 minutes for an hour. What?
This is in 20 minutes for an hour?
They have some maintenance that they need to do. So I have to hit 5 balls a minute for the next 20 minutes? Like, I'm not waiting here for an hour after just to hit fucking balls. And I was just like, I felt like it was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Yeah, probably could have told you that before.
Why didn't you tell me that before? I would have just said, I could get through a medium bucket in 20 minutes.
Right.
Because they must have known that I also hate the military or something. Yeah. Like that. I don't fucking know.
How'd you hit them?
I hit them okay. I hit them pretty good. It was my ball was moving. And as somebody who's played golf with me, this is not my typical ball flight, although it has been sort of weirdly going this way lately. But the ball was drawing a lot.
That's good.
Now, if there was a huge wind coming off that side, so I was like, but I was getting frustrated because I was like aiming, and then the ball would be like 25 yards left of where I thought it was, and I was like, is it like I was in my own head because I don't play golf enough to like I was like, how much is this the wind? Or is it like, am I hitting these balls dead straight every time? And this wind is just pushing me 25 yards left on every fucking shot? Or do I all of a sudden draw / hook the ball?
Well,
Only
one way to find out.
And the way I found out was I turned around and I hit the ball backwards off the tee at the pro shop and was like, yeah, no, that's now it's fading. That's the wind.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, I got a new toy today.
What'd you get?
The Tour Striker ball.
Now, this is, tell me if I'm correct.
By the way, this is not a sponsor of the show.
Yeah.
It feels like very sponsored, but it's not.
This is a ball. It's a squishy ball. It's got a hook around. You're going to hang it around your neck. You're going to stuff it between your forearms. And you're going to keep those forearms tightly connected as you swing. Okay. Yeah.
Because my problem is I get very, I have a flying elbow.
Uh-huh. And
this forces me into a better position. So I'm going to hit like a million golf balls with this thing.
Right.
And I think it's going to help.
I've seen another version of this that's like a sleeve or a shirt that you wear where your arms, it's like a straight jacket almost.
Yeah, I've seen that too. That looks a little extreme.
Now, you could just do that with like a bouncy ball that you got at like the supermarket or no? Or this is like...
This literally comes with a fucking lanyard and it's $40. Fuck it. But yeah, you could definitely make your own.
Well, I said as the show started that, you know, at this point in my life, I'm like with my age and my athleticism and my knee injury, I'm basically down to golf and surfing. It's kind of where I'm at.
It's a good life.
It's pretty good. Although, you know, both things that I took up as an adult, very frustrating sports, both sports. You're way better at if you do as a kid, like most things.
Yes.
But you are, you're a very good golfer and, you're a pretty good surfer too. My question for you is today, somebody tells you, you have to quit one forever. Are you choosing to keep surfing or are you choosing to keep golf?
Fuck. I probably would quit golf.
You'd quit golf?
Yeah. Just because surfing is the greatest thing that you can do on this planet.
It's good for you mentally. I would say not only are you a better golfer, but you are, I mean, if you looked at like the, you know, the percentiles, you'd be in a very high percentile of golfer.
Yeah. But I'd quit golf. Surfing. I played golf certainly recently more than I surfed too, but surfing is the best thing that you could do with your life, with your time that I've done as a human on this planet. So I would choose surfing.
There you go. There you have it. How are the waves out there in Bridgehampton these days?
We're in the middle of a hurricane, it seems, right now, as I look out my window. It's very, very rainy and very windy.
Mets games canceled on back-to-back nights. Thank God. I don't think I could handle watching Mets games right now.
Yeah, I haven't seen them yet, but the Yankees are off to a good start. I think I predicted on your Dirty Sports show that Soto was going to have a monster year, and he seems to be off to a good start.
So it's a hurricane there. Will that lead to waves for you guys?
We leave tomorrow for Memphis, so I haven't even checked, but I'm sure this is drumming up some kind of waves. There've been a lot of waves, man. It's been good here lately.
What is the occasion of your Memphis trip?
My nephew's getting married.
Okay.
Peter Wagner, you know him?
I do know him. How old is Peter Wagner?
I think he's 28.
28. And you really just beat him to the finish line. That was you dove for the line.
Yeah. And like I said to you the other day, he beat you.
He did. Yeah. Tell how's married life?
Married life is great.
Biggest change between dating life to married life. Now you had a pretty low key wedding, but it's
Yes. The biggest change is when you fight, it's not over. You don't worry about like, oh, is this the end of us? No, you're fucking married. Like, you just had a fight. It's so much. I should have done it a long time ago for that reason. It gets rid of so much angst.
Because when you're just dating, every fight could be the end.
Could be
Whereas
the end.
When you're married, you would have to have paperwork and all that.
Seems like a lot. And then you're also like, are we going to literally like do all the paperwork because, you know.
Because I ate the last two eggs?
Right. Yeah. Because you put chocolate trail mix in the trail mix that I don't want any chocolate in? Like, is that what?
That would be great if that was the reason. We don't want a divorce. We'd like to dissolve the marriage because it's early enough and we have irreconcilable differences.
Yeah, she's trying to kill me.
What is that? She puts chocolate in the trail mix.
Yeah, trying to kill me. And I'm trying to lose my belly for this wedding. So I don't want chocolate in the trail mix.
Are you allergic to chocolate?
No, I'm just trying to lose my belly because I got to fit into the suit for the wedding. Plus, you know me. I just like to eat very healthy.
Yeah. Is your suit – are you pushing the limits to your suit right now?
Yeah. But I just got my pants taken out in 1 inch. The woman was like, it's a 10-year-old suit. The woman was like, 1 inch, you're in really good shape. So that made me feel good. That was good for my self-esteem.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's almost like worked out perfectly, but like I, I feel like the last few years, I mean, I'm going to say the last 10 years, every suit that I bought in the last 10 years was a very specific style of suit. You know, the modern suit, much, much trimmer suit, slimmer fitting, a lot of single breasted two button suits mm-hmm. became very popular.
But two buttons also a classic suit, right?
Yeah, classic suit. But like three buttons were a sort of a classic single-breasted style for a long time too. And, you know, skinnier pants became a thing. And I feel like that trend is sort of shifting back to an older style thing. And
which I like, by the way. I'm glad to see this skinny. It's so bad.
So I went to put on a suit that I maybe got 10 years ago. I was like, this is a little tight. So then I put on a jacket that my dad had made for me when I was 18. And I was like, this fits perfectly because it used to fit like a 90s
right.
oversized sort of fit. Now I've grown, I've sort of cut the difference in half. Now it just like fits well. And so I put that on my girlfriend, like, that looks perfect. And I was like, great.
Wow.
I've gone full circle back to my original suit jackets.
Right.
So
well done.
That was nice. Yeah. What happens? I'd still like to get into a bit better shape and be able to fit into all the suits I own, but we shall see.
I know. It's fucking depressing. But I've made a good little effort here, minus the chocolate and the trail mix, and I feel like I have some momentum. So
I'm right there with you. So good luck on your dietary journeys, Pete.
Yeah.
We have done in the last what would you say year and a half. We've done a lot of comedy together.
We have
begun something that we had plans to do for more than a decade. We're like, just go on the road together. I would say probably about a year and a half. What's the first show I brought you on, like, where that we properly did? I was like, you're going to open for me. Would it be Stanford last year?
No.
Before that?
Yeah, California. I think Andrew Norelli's show at the American Museum was like one of the first ones.
Maybe the original Sneaky Pete's appearance. Yep. I brought you on the road a lot. And also, you have really made a considerable effort to like kick your comedy career into a higher gear. I don't want to say you're in high gear,
no,
but in a much higher gear. What inspired you to get back to comedy? You did it sort of, I would say, casually, a very pizza star or casual for many years. You disappeared off the face of the earth. You went to Costa Rica. You stopped doing all kinds of the work. You were just a jungle man.
I was writing though when I was down there.
That's right. Yep. And you recently, you know, I'd say in the last year and a half, like, really got back into comedy. What led to that decision?
I mean, I never should have stopped. I always knew that I would get back in at some point, and you thankfully like kind of tugged me back in, gave me a little nudge that I needed, and off we were. So I think the fear of like humiliation really was the catalyst, because I knew I was doing shows with you. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to fucking do shows every night that I can, open mics. I was doing the worst open mics in San Diego last year, every single night, waiting hours to go do like 3 minutes. Like, I don't wish that on anybody, but I was like, I'm just going to fucking do it full on, because I don't want to embarrass myself when I start doing these shows with Joe. I knew I had stuff on the schedule. It's like, you know, this wedding. Like, I know I have it on the schedule, so I got to get my belly, got to get rid of my belly. Like, it's good to put something on the schedule. I know now I have shows with you in April, so here we go. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'll probably do a Zoom open mic after this, which – I mean, they're unbelievable, these Zoom open mics. But I did one last night.
I'd rather be dead.
You'd rather be dead, yeah. But you know what?
but thank you for bringing up April 25th, New York Comedy Club, Stanford. Pete will be featuring. Bronson Jones will be hosting for us.
So Gerber not hosting.
Have you saw Gerber recently?
He did the show with me.
Did he mention that he wasn't working with us?
He did. Well, he wanted to know. Yeah.
I feel bad because he never replied to him. I should have mentioned to him. Gerber was my first choice, but also Bronson, who will be hosting, is an LA comic. They used to put me up in Venice for years and years and years. Now back on the East Coast, he saw I was doing it. He asked. I gave it to him. I should have told Gerber before I started promoting. Here's why. But I also reached out to him recently and said, hey, I'll love to hang with you while I'm home.
Yeah. And Gerber appreciates you because you kind of got him back in. He disappeared as well for different
reasons.
Right.
That's right.
He disappeared because he's a fucking hypochondriac and thought right. He thought he was dying for like 6 years.
Of what?
I think ALS.
But you thought he had ALS?
I think so. Yeah.
Does he have ALS?
No, he's fine. He's healthy.
I thought he had Lou Gehrig's disease.
I think so. He's not a hypochondriac anymore, though.
He's not. That's good. Now that he's been cured of ALS.
He's been cured. Yeah. So I went to Costa Rica and was surfing and writing and disappeared from stand-up. Mark was in his apartment in the fetal position for 6 years.
Now
you got us both back in the game.
Yeah. And Mark always credits me for that, which I appreciate because he's a great comic and you're a great comic as well. And that's the thing. I always knew you guys had it. It's like, hey man, if I just give them shows, they'll have to get their shit together and they'll have to do it.
Exactly.
I assume anybody who listens to the Joe Prano podcast is a Joe Prano fan of some sort. For those people, let's give them and also for myself, it's like good to take a self inventory. What for myself and my fans, Pete, what is it like to be on the road with Joe Prano? What is Joe Prano's road feature? What's that life entail? What's that life look like? How's it feel?
It's great. I've never been on the road featuring for someone else, but I can't imagine. I think you run a pretty loose ship as far as like what you demand of your opener. I'm not selling merch, which I'm eternally grateful for.
You're not selling my merch or your merch. Yeah.
No one's merch.
No one's merch.
Yeah. You don't put pressure. There are no constraints. You don't tell me what I can or can't do as far as comedian. So for all that shit is incredible. Then you're my friend outside of comedy. So it's, I'm just hanging with my buddy, you know,
yeah.
You're going to be on your phone a lot. That's just, you know, we all know that. And you're going to have some type of fight with some type of internet presence along the road at some point, which I'll be hearing about in great detail. And sometimes it's wildly entertaining. Probably going to have some really interesting food choices, you know, that both confuse and inspire me to branch out a little more. Like, you are truly a man of decadence when it comes to eating. You always order the most decadent thing on any menu. And that inspires me as someone who's, you know, looking for the healthiest meal. You're looking for the most delicious meal.
I for me, especially when I'm on the road, it's like if I go someplace, I mean, if we stop at, you know, it's not like I'm getting something on the roadside McDonald's that's especially that, but if it's like when I go somewhere, I like to sit down and Google like best restaurant, and then provided it's not some, you know, 5-star Michelin $400 a plate thing, it's like, well, we're fucking here, like let's try that, let's eat that. If I see something that's interesting, I'll be like, what's the deal? I like it because it's like I can say I was there and I tried the thing and I did the thing. And then when I'm there, it's like, I'm not going to get the, you know, like, what's your specials?
Yeah.
So when we were in Alaska, as I was waiting for you to arrive, we both got in like relatively late. I said, what is nearby that I could eat? And they said, you know, what's open pretty late and is pretty good is whiskey and ramen. And it was right around the corner from our hotel. I checked your schedule. It looked like you were not going to make it. So I went and I went to Whiskey and Ramen. It was a whiskey bar that served ramen. And they also had like tiki drinks on the menu. I was like, am I having a fever dream where like I have created a restaurant? and I ate it and it was so good. So we went back and we did that.
That was highlight of Anchorage.
Food tourism is, you know, if I'm someplace, I want to, I want to go to the tiki bar. I want to go to the place that they tell me has the good drinks, has the good food. Like, I think a lot of when I go on the road with Eddie, he wants to, he's like, we got to climb this mountain. And I'm like, we should go to that tiki bar that, that apparently has really good dumplings.
Yes. This is, I mean, by the way, did anything I say surprise you about being on the road with you?
No, I was wondering if, you know, I guess, you know, I was wondering, like, I feel like I'm pretty easy when it comes to your material or what you do. Before, like, I truly don't give, like, bomb, kill, fucking get in a fight in the audience. Have the, you've canceled, you've had the show canceled on us before I even got on stage. Those are the best nights of my whole comedy life when I still got paid, but you got the show shut down before I had to perform.
Yeah. No, it's great. But yeah, you're always going to take us to a tiki bar, and there's always going to be dumplings. There's always going to be delicious breakfast in some place. It's great. It's fun, man. I love it. I love going on the road with you. I want to keep doing more of it. I want to get this golf thing going so we can start touring like that. That would be insane.
Yeah.
Surfing golf comedy. Let's do it.
The surf and turf tour.
Yeah.
If the Kooks of Comedy doesn't get greenlit for a return, maybe we'll just have to start surf and turf. The surfing thing and golf and comedy podcast.
Do you remember the time that you were helping me clean out my storage unit in Tribeca, and then we ended up getting really high and going to the United States Marine recruiting office?
I do remember that.
You know that?
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
What was so fascinating about that was, I imagine a Marine recruiter or whatever. It is just that, a lot of recruiting, convincing people. I think when somebody opens the door to the recruiting office and enters themselves, they think this is what we've been, you know, when it's like when somebody opens the door to a car dealership and says, I want to buy a car today.
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's get you in there. So we opened the door.
We went in. Yeah, they didn't pull us off the street.
And we said, like, we're interested in joining the Marines.
What's this Marines thing all about? We're thinking about doing this.
This guy's eyes lit up. Yeah. Little did he know, we were stoned to the gills.
Very high.
And at least one of us was, I mean, I could honestly say I'm the last person that was going to fucking join the, I was like, I thought about joining Al Qaeda. Like, what are we talking about here? Like,
we're the last two people on earth that would join the military. Like, if there was anything remotely close to a draft, I would flee this country in a heartbeat.
So there was no moment. And he was like selling us so hard. We were stoned out of our minds. And all I can think of is this guy.
But do you remember some of the tactics? First of all, he separated us very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I could still kind of hear you were like kind of an earshot. But he basically was saying to me, I was like 36 at the time, 35. And he was like, you're a loser. You know, you got nothing going on. Meanwhile, I had a good job. He didn't even know. I don't know what I told him, but I was just come from my Johnson & Johnson job where we were cleaning up. I was paying you to clean up my storage unit. I was buying you lunch, I think. But anyway, he was like, you're a loser. You have nothing going on. You've achieved nothing in your life. And now is a chance for you to finally make something of yourself in the second half here, because, you know, he also made it seem like I was really old. I guess I'm old for a military guy at that point.
Yeah.
But, and then he was just like, you know, where do you want to live? What do you want to do? Do you want to live in Italy?
I remember that. I remember it was big. Like, the military is a choose your own adventure. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? I remember him asking me about my education, and I told him, and he jumped right away to like, you could be an officer. Here's what you don't know about me. I might only have a BA in journalism, but I have a master's in hating authority. I'm not going to be a lieutenant or whatever the fuck a Marine is. Like,
yeah. And I remember it being fun because I was like fucking with him and, you know, entertaining him for a while. And he did have me thinking about like a life in Europe for a second, you know, but then it got weird when he wanted me to like fill out both of us. I think at the same time, we started to fill out paperwork, and he was really pushing for like North Carolina tomorrow.
We'd be in basic training. That's right.
By the way, never mentioned war, not once.
No,
we were at war at the time.
Didn't we were very war. Much at war. This is very like 2005.
Much. Yeah, this is Iraq war, or Afghanistan. See, I don't even know. Both. There was a war.
Yeah, both of them.
And he never mentioned that.
There were two major wars.
Yeah. He was mentioning like, you know, France, the countryside, Germany. Sounded great. Anyway, once it got real and I started to fill out the paperwork, I was very high and I started to get a little paranoid. And I think I changed my name to like Pete Starr instead of Pete Sestaro. And then I was just kind of looking over at you like, I think we gotta
get out of here. Decided,
like, let's get the fuck out of here at the last second.
I just can't wait for my military background check from the Naval Golf Course to come back and be like, you're already in the military. You signed up.
You're an officer.
You became a Marine in 2005. Have you not been getting your checks?
But it did make me feel bad for people who really go in there. Like they fucking, it felt very much like you were at a used car dealership.
Well, that brings me to our last. Let me take a look here. I got to put my glass on. 50 minutes in. I want to do a recurring segment from the Kooksa Comedy Podcast and then many a podcast that I am part of. You got any new bits for us, Pete?
Yeah.
We can work out maybe some ideas because I've got a bit of writer's block going on. I have a bit I've been trying to work out forever. That maybe you can help with, and then maybe I can help you with some of your stuff.
Sure. You want to go first?
Sure. I think I've run this bit idea by you, and I just can't quite figure out how I'm gonna, like, you know my set pretty good at this point. How I'm gonna go into this? Like, what is it gonna be tied to? What is it? How am I gonna and how to make it not seem ridiculously hateful, anti-American, unpatriotic, whatever? But like, truly, at this point, nothing breaks me like I travel so much for comedy. Nothing breaks me like the active military when they let the active military board the plane before me. Everything else is somewhat justified. I believe fully in a rewards program. I am a rewards program kind of guy. So if you've flown JetBlue and you got a platinum status, sure. You should be rewarded gold, like, do all the things. And then they go, people who need extra time boarding, you're in a fucking wheelchair. Sure, of course. I've been in a wheelchair to board a plane. Parents with small children. I get it. Do I think that you should have left them home? Of course I do. But you should get to take your stupid, baby seat on and put it in the overhead before the overheads are full and get these kids there because I don't need to be following some Cheeto covered iPad carrying shit machine down the put them on and get them all settled.
All right.
And then they go active military. It breaks me because I feel like what they're saying to me when I'm waiting is you, sir, have paid, you have gotten an education. You have used your education toward a career. In that career, you have earned money, and you have earned enough money to buy a certain class of airline ticket where you should be boarding next. But you have to wait because that guy right there at 17 got a DUI, and a judge told him it's either jail or the military.
Yeah.
And then he gave up his freedom, went and sucked on the government teat, shaved his head, and went to probably Italy or God knows where since we're not currently at war. And now he gets to fucking board the plane before me. And I can't figure out how to do it where it's not just going to be an angry rant that leads to the patriotic type booing me off stage.
Yeah, I can't either.
I feel like maybe the way to do it, maybe I've just figured it out here. Maybe the way to do it is to not do maybe not do the uniform military part. Just be like, okay, anybody needs extra time? Any parents traveling with small children? Anybody who got a DUI at 17 and didn't have the SAT scores to get into college. Excuse me? What are we doing here? What is this? Why is this portion? Oh, sorry. It's the active military portion. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
That could be an angle. Again, I don't know.
This podcast is why I will not be able to golf at...
Yeah, they'll probably... I'd wait. How long is this background check?
2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, maybe wait. I love that you take on these things, though, and you feel this is something you feel strongly about, is the active military boarding the plane before you. I actually feel stronger about women with children. Like, that bothers me more.
That they board the plane first.
Yeah, I feel like you should have to have a special letter to travel with a small child. Like, what are you doing? Why? You know that that's going to pollute the air for everyone else. Like, their noise. I'm a big noise pollution is pollution kind of person. And it's just like, fucking deal with it. I wanted to take my newborn to go meet its grandparents. Like, I don't know. I just
get a car.
Yeah. It's so unnecessary, but I don't think I could do that. You know, I don't have a kid, but just know that I'm inconveniencing everyone around me. But, you know, people do it all the time. People are doing it right now. There's a baby screaming in an airplane right now as we do this.
Yeah. There's always no, it's like Friends. Friends is always airing somewhere. A baby is always screaming bloody murder.
It's the one constant.
A baby at every moment of the day for the rest of time, there will be a baby that is screaming in a manner that you have never heard somebody scream before.
Yeah.
On usually, a plane.
Yeah. So I have more of a problem with that, but even that, you know, I give up.
Well, thanks for your help. Any new bits for you?
Yeah, I got some new bits. I also have been traveling a lot, and I passed by a place in San Diego called Yoga Box. It's a yoga studio called Yoga Box. I feel like that's not a good name for a yoga studio. Yeah. It seems more like something that like an ailment that happens when you wear yoga pants for too long. You know? You hear about Jenny? She's got a yoga box. Ooh, like there's something there, right?
Absolutely. And what's funny is yoga, like anytime I see yoga, I already start thinking about box. And now you're like, it's like you're doubling down on me.
Yeah. Can you believe they call it yoga box?
Yeah. It's like a, you know, remember they did like the Taco Bell cantina? It'd be like Taco Bell diarrhea. You're like, this is redundant.
Yeah.
Yoga box is redundant.
Was yoga snatch taken? What else do I want to talk about? I was doing mushrooms the other day.
Me too.
I went to the beach with the dogs. And when I was driving back, there was a car in front of me. A Subaru had a dog in the back. And a swan. They're both a dog and a swan in the hatchback of the
Subaru. There was an actual dog and an actual swan in the hatchback.
Well, I thought it was a swan, but it turns out it was just the tail of the dog. It was the dog and the dog's tail. But I had created a whole story in my mind already that it was a dog and a swan. And I was like, well, this is so cool that a dog and a swan could be friends. Like, but it was just on mushrooms, and it was just a dog. And the dog's tail. So
I think there, you know, something with the bit is how, you know, mushrooms give you such a sense of like, you know, positivity. There's the euphoria that comes with taking mushrooms. Sometimes you get so euphoric, you start imagining a world that is so good that like dogs and swans living in harmony in the rear facing seat of a Subaru Outback. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, when you're not on mushrooms, you just think the whole world's violent and evil. That dog's gonna snap that swan's neck and eat its guts, because that's a delicacy to both dogs and humans. No, they're living. They get along. They're seeing the world on a totally different, you know, plane than the rest of us. No, I've actually, it's so much euphoria, I've actually imagined things that are not possible.
It really is a good advertisement for mushrooms and not for mushrooms at the same time. Like, I'm driving and I'm seeing a dog and a swan.
Is that Joe Prano riding in the sidecar of a Marine's motorcycle?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just on mushrooms. That would like, never happen.
Probably not good that you're seeing things that aren't there while you're driving. But then also, like, yeah, you're seeing, like you're saying, you know, beautiful things, harmony in this world that actually doesn't exist.
What's your mushroom regimen these days? How are you consuming your mushrooms?
Yeah, gummies, the place that you told us about. We'll go like 4 days on, 3 days off.
Nice. Morning microdose?
Depends, yeah. Sometimes morning, sometimes if it's a work day, I'll do it in the afternoon.
Okay.
Evening, after work, whatever that means. It's behind a paywall.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
It's behind a paywall.
It's behind a paywall. Four days on, 3 days off.
Got it. And also, I think in the world we live in today, like... mushrooms, everybody. If you're not microdosing mushrooms or macrodosing them, really.
Yeah. I feel great though. I'm on mushrooms right now. I mean,
fantastic.
Yeah.
How have you seen that it affects your golf or your surfing?
I've been playing better golf. I think it affects my golf and my surfing and my life all the same way. It's like, this doesn't really matter that much. I don't need to get too worked up about whatever this thing is.
Yeah.
And I should probably just let this pass and then, yeah, just get back to it. So I have a much better attitude when I'm playing golf, a much lighter attitude. I'm not as high strung. I don't get as angry. The next thing you know, I'm playing better golf.
Three putt a hole and you're like, I could be angry, but remember that time, that dog and that goose are just sitting there.
Yeah, I could let this ruin my day.
Best of friends. That goose that goose didn't let the imminent threat of violence ruin his day as he sat in the back. Like,
where's the camera? It was like this. Oh my god, there it is. It's like this, and then the dog was like, and I was like, oh my god, they're like friends. And I got the whole story. And then I saw this is tail. Not a swan. There are swans here. It's not that far fetched.
Right.
And my friend Bruce has a dog and a cat and they're friends.
And you live in the Hamptons. It's not that far fetched that some rich asshole would have a swan as a pet.
Or bring it to the beach. There was a girl who brought her goat to the beach at one point here. So no, it's not, none of it is that far fetched. I think that's important.
Well, Pete, thank you for being here. That was the new bits. That was Pete Sestaro. That was the JP Pete. I told you I'd try to keep it to an hour for you because you might do a Zoom open mic. So I'm going to do that. You're going to do a Zoom open mic tonight. When's your next show? Is it with me in Stanford?
It is not with you in Stanford.
Let's go.
I just got booked on Randy Epley.
No way.
New show.
New Chelsea. Show.
Yeah.
In Chelsea.
He actually mentioned you in the invite to me.
Wow. When is it?
I'm doing it on April 24th.
I'll be in town. I should do Randy's show.
It's at Selena in the Chelsea Hotel at 8:30 p.m. on the 24th. And he said to me, bring your friend Jose. I think is what he called you. He went Spanish. Bring your amigo Jose to the show, too, if you can. So.
I might come. I arrive on the 20th. I know I arrive early on the 23rd. We have the 25th in New York Comedy Club, Stanford. I can't promise Pete won't have GERD, but I can promise I won't care if he does. We're gonna go eat decadent New Haven style pizza before or after the show. And we're going to perform New York Comedy Club, Stanford. Pete's going to open for me. It's going to be fantastic. I got to write some new bits because I realize I'm coming with like four new jokes than what I did this time last year. So, I mean, I have a feeling if the crowd there was, and I have gotten feedback from the people that know I'm coming, don't do the Taylor Swift thing again. It really upset us. I go, well, you didn't like the Taylor Swift thing. Wait till you hear this. The military should die bit I'm working on. So come see us at New York Comedy Club, Stanford, April 25th. Follow Pete on Instagram at Pete Sestaro. Follow him here. He's gonna be returning soon, hopefully. Pete, thank you for doing it, and I will talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Hey Joe, I like Joe's show. I tell everybody that's my shit. See, I had a long ride, turned the volume up high, and the time flew by so quick. I laughed out loud, that's what it's about. I really don't feel safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause he drinks till he hits the flow. Hey Joe, it's time to stop the show. Pack it up and away we go. Donate cause we almost broke. Everybody, that was Joe.
So great, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye, Joe.